or whatever floats your boat. Finally, take 99% of your profit disbursement and use it to pay down debt. Smallest first. Call it in using your debit card or go online and get it done immediately. Then, and only then, raise your glass and say, "Cheers to me." Then we dance or swing our sweaty, stringy mullet hair around while listening to Metallica. The party's over in about 10 minutes, but that debt? It's gone forever. Hey, wasn't that a total blast? You may think I'm being sarcastic here, but I'm not. To me, paying down debt is winning, and winning is fun. Use the remaining 1% of your profit disbursement however you please, but it needs to feel like a reward. Go out for dinner. If you don't have enough for dinner, go out for ice cream. No matter what your disbursement is, cherish it. Celebrate with it. Your business is still serving you and killing debt at the same time. Actually, it's funny, my organization has started a celebration whenever there's an achievement. And an achievement could literally be paying down one credit card and it's gone. One of our members does that, or someone writes in, we buy a bottle of wine. And you can buy a bottle of wine for like $6 or $2 chuck for, it's no longer $2, maybe it's $3. Or you can get a nicer bottle, more expensive. But we put the bottle of wine up there and then we write the story on the back of the bottle of wine. We put a sticky note back there and paste it there. Then when we have a group meetup, we do ProfitCon or when we do our ProfitCon event or when we do one of our other training events or meetups and our members come, we are cracking bottles of wine, but we hold it up and we read off the story again. It's a great way to recycle the celebration and to relive again the accomplishments we make. It's so important to celebrate. Rewards are, as I was saying, an important feature of Profit First. We must celebrate. Many experts will tell you to eradicate debt only. Problem is, while debt reduction alleviates pain, it doesn't provide much pleasure. You already had that when you spent the money. Now you got to make up for it. Experiencing both is ideal, alleviating the pain and having the pleasure. Packs way more punch. Destroying debt feels good, and reminiscing about tearing up credit card statements while enjoying a nice bottle of vino feels better. After you've eradicated your core debt, credit cards, bank loans, and student loans, start using 45% of your quarterly profit disbursement to kill remaining long-term debt and keep 55% for your splurge item or experience. This is another psychological move. It's more gratifying to get the bigger chunk of the fruits of your labor and spend it on whatever the hell you want than to take the smaller chunk. So use 45% to expedite the payoff of long-term debt beyond your normally monthly payments, mortgage, car payments, and keep the rest for whatever crazy antics you're up to. What? I don't judge. And I totally didn't see anything. After you own your cars and home outright, and have wiped out debt from every nook and cranny of your life, 100% of the profit disbursement goes to you. And this time, the party had better be legit. I'm talking a band and some good booze, maybe stuffed pizza instead of plain, and my wife and I better get an invite. We'll kiteboard over. Lock in your lifestyle. According to Parkinson's Law, if you have $10 in your pocket, you will spend $10. As your income increases, Parkinson's Law takes over, and we spend every extra penny we earn. Now that you know your salary and actually take it, you need to live within your means. Then you're going to lock in your lifestyle. What that means is, no matter how good things get, and this is going to be a challenge for you because now that you're following Profit First, things will get amazing, you will not expand your lifestyle in response. You need to accumulate cash, lots of it, and that means no new cars, no brand new furniture, or crazy vacations. For the next 5 years, you will lock it in and live the lifestyle you are designing now so that all of your extra profit goes toward giving you that ultimate reward, financial freedom. Don't freak out on me. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't go out to dinner with your sweetie or go away for the weekend. Were you thinking of a B&B? Because I love B&Bs. You need to enjoy life. I get it and support it. What I am telling you is, in order for Profit First to have a permanent impact on your life, you need to build a big gap, as big as possible, between what you earn and what you spend. The more cash you can collect, the better, because at a certain point, money starts earning you substantial money all by itself. Money yields interest and returns from investments. Remember, once the money you have collected yields more new money every year than you spend in a year, you've achieved financial freedom. Here are 5 rules to help you stay locked into your lifestyle for the next 5 years. 1. Always start by looking for a free option. 2. Never buy new when you can get the same benefit you would if you bought used. It's used as soon as you buy it anyway. 3. Never pay full price if you can avoid it. 4. Negotiate and seek alternatives first. 5. Delay major purchases until you've written down 10 alternatives to making the purchase and have thought through each one. Save your splurging for profit-first quarterly disbursements. Yeah. The profit-first lifestyle is a frugal lifestyle, for sure. But the frugal lifestyle is not the same as a cheap lifestyle. You can and will live very well, actually better, when you are frugal than you would when you are posing as a big spender. Why? Because frugality removes financial stress, enabling you to better appreciate and enjoy the things and experiences you purchase. Big spenders buy the same things, but their purchases are served with a big old heaping serving of massive stress. Who's got time for that? Remember, well-dressed poverty is still poverty. If staring down the next 5 years is too much for you, that's cool. I have a plan B for you. And if you do rock the 5 years, this is your next step after your locked-in lifestyle term is up. It's called the wedge, a term that has been floating around entrepreneurial circles for a while, which, as far as I can tell, was originally coined by Brian Tracy. The idea of the wedge is to only gradually and mindfully upgrade your lifestyle as your income increases. Every time your income increases, you set aside half of the increase as savings so that you don't expand your lifestyle to, as Parkinson's Law suggests, use all available resources. So, for example, if you're taking home $100,000 post-tax, because the taxes are paid by your business, and your profit-first lifestyle means you're setting aside $20,000 every year and living on $80,000, this is where you will start your wedge. Half of every income bump over and above $100,000 will go directly into the vault. The vault starts piling up cash and changes from a holy crap, I have no money fund to a holy cow, that's a lot of money fund. Let's say your take-home income goes up to $135,000, an increase of $35,000 over the previous year. You would take 50% of the $35,000, that's $17,500, and drop it into the vault. This leaves just over $117,000. Because you live the profit-first lifestyle, you now take 20% and set it aside for savings. With the increase in income, that number is now $23,400. That brings your annual savings up to around $50,000. And you are now living on more as well, $93,600 to be exact, an increase of more than $13,000. Your life moves forward, but the wedge system, combined with Profit First, allows your savings to climb super fast, getting you that much closer to financial freedom. Profit First Kids. Regardless of how you get your money, the universe seems to find a way to make us earn it. That is why I don't gift my kids an allowance. Instead, I set up a job list, a variant on chores, with corresponding pay rates and post it on the refrigerator. By the way, you can download this if you like. It's in the resources section at mikemichalowicz.com. One more little shortcut. You can also go to mikemotorbike.com. That auto-forwards to mikemichalowicz.com because I totally get it. Michalowicz is a doozy of a name. The kids decide how much they earn by how much they work for it. As I write this, my daughter is on a 6-week vacation in Hawaii that she paid for herself. 3 years back, she went to Spain on her own dime. This is surely a little bit of daddy's bragging, but I also want to drive home the point that the goal of Profit First for Kids is to make them appreciate the value of money, learn to manage it, and strip away any sense of entitlement. Here's the basics of how to do it. Give your kids some mailing envelopes, you know, the snail mail type, and have them label each one. First, one for the big dream, like my daughter's horse. Have them stash up 25% of their chore money in this envelope. Second, one to help support the family, This number should be a recurring number, such as $5 a week to contribute to groceries or entertainment. The key is to have a recurring fee so they get used to having to pay out something on a regular basis. Make sure the number is age appropriate. You know, a 5-year-old probably can't afford $5, but they can afford 5 cents. Third, one for impact. Have them put 5 to 10% into this envelope to give to a charity of their choice, or to use in a meaningful way, like starting their own business, one that serves both the community and makes money. Fourth, one for the vault. This is where they will sock away 10% of their funds for a critical emergency. Hopefully your kids will never have one, but you want them prepared from day one, which will also become an investing source as the money accumulates. Fifth, one envelope for mad money to buy whatever they need or want, toys, music, books. Let them earn money and have fun. It goes without saying that the kids must follow the profit-first golden rule. Always allocate the money to the different accounts, envelopes, before doing anything else. This system will teach your kids so much about the value of money, how to manage it, how to earn it, how to finance their dreams. It may feel strange at first, talking to you, helicopter parents, and you'll surely get some pushback, but this is a massive gift to them. Imagine how your financial life might have turned out differently had someone taught you these important lessons and strategies. Or if you are lucky enough to have parents that did teach you, just think about how well it served you, and you can do the same for your kids. It's funny. The piggy bank story is one that readers mention the most. It stays with them. I know it sure stayed with me. It is forever implanted on my brain, and I know it will be my final thought before I die. My daughter, Adela, is all grown up now and was accepted to attend Virginia Tech, my alma mater. Go Hokies. When I drove her down to the orientation, we stopped at Cracker Barrel. Over lunch, I brought up the piggy bank story. I hadn't asked her about it since she was 9. "What are you talking about?" she said. I recounted the story and she shook her head. She didn't remember it at all. For a second, I was saddened that such a pivotal moment was simply a fleeting memory for her. Then I realized, of course she won't remember. For her, offering me her hard-earned pennies, nickels, and dimes was an automatic thing to do, like holding the door open for an elderly person. Good money management and caring for others is just automatic for her. It requires no extra skills or thought. It's just who she is. When I dropped Adela off at campus, I gave her the usual spiel about getting the most out of college, yada yada, dad stuff, yada yada. Krista and I require all of our children to participate in paying for their college education. What Adela doesn't know yet is that the last few profit distributions have already paid for her college. The money she put in toward her college is actually going toward paying for her wedding and a big old wedding cake that's going to be shaped like a piggy bank. Take action. Live profit first. Step 1. Set up corresponding profit first allocation accounts for your personal expenses. Step 2, based on your most recent pay and the lifestyle lock explained in this chapter, figure out how much you should truly be living on. Step 3, have a sit down with your entire family and talk numbers. Tell them what you're doing with Profit First and the positive impact it will have on your family's long-term financial health. And if it helps, you can tell the kids that this method was something suggested by me, Uncle Mikey. Chapter 11, How to Keep It from Falling Apart. The worst enemy of Profit First is not the economy, your staff, your customers, or your mother-in-law. That could be your mother-in-law. The worst enemy of Profit First is you. The system is simple, but you have to have the discipline to implement it consistently, and that's where most of us fall short. We won't do the debt freeze all the way, or at all. We won't cut back on our staffing expenses or move into a grade D office space. We surely won't challenge the industry norms and try to innovate, but we will steal from ourselves, taking money we originally allocated for profit to pay bills. We will steal from our tax account to pay our own salaries. We'll borrow, we'll beg, we'll steal from ourselves. And when we let Profit First fall apart, what is the single biggest reason why? We go it alone. When I wrote the original version of this chapter, we were having a mother of a bad winter here on the East Coast. I hear other parts of the country also had it rough, but I had been snowbound in my house for what seemed like 84 years. I remember being afraid to turn on the Weather Channel for fear that I might finally, permanently lose my mind. I'm not sure which state had had the worst of it, but while my heart feels it was my beloved Jersey, I'm pretty sure it was Minnesota. Actually, I know for sure it was Minnesota. Anjanette Harper, one of my best pals, as in we've actually shared deodorant on a road trip, best pal, and the best damn writer on this planet, lives across the border in New York. We were sharing war stories over the phone about how the latest storm had affected each of our towns when she said, "Mike, I survived a mile-long hike in the Minnesota Northwoods in January. We were sent out in a waist-deep snow with nothing but a compass, some matches, and a bag of granola. This winter has nothing on me." Anjanette went on to tell me a hilarious story about Camp Widgiewagon. Yeah, that's its real name. A winter camp she attended with her classmates near Ely, Minnesota when she was 13. She explained, "It was ridiculous. We were this group of city kids sent to an environmental camp way up north during the coldest month of the year. We weren't allowed to use the indoor bathroom except to brush our teeth. Seriously, the toilet seat had duct tape over it. Instead, we had to put on 3 layers of clothes plus outerwear to trek out to the Biffies," that's outhouses for us Jerseyans, "in the woods to pee. Just try going to the bathroom in the middle of a pitch black night on a frozen toilet seat in a tiny wooden shack with 2 active wolf packs howling at each other nearby." I laughed so hard as Anjanette went on to tell me about more of her adventures at Camp Widgiewagon. But it wasn't until she explained how the counselors managed to get the campers to change their wasteful habits that I realized I had to share her story with you. The first night, after we had dinner, we were asked to scrape the leftover food on our plates into a bucket. One of the counselors weighed our combined leftovers and announced that we had managed to waste several pounds of food. Being a bunch of privileged brats, we responded with, "Yeah, so?" We were then lectured about how a few pounds of waste, repeated daily, adds up to a few tons of waste, and soon enough, that adds up to a few landfills full of waste. Next, we got the ultimatum. We had to get the waste per meal down to a few ounces by the end of the week. I can't remember what the exact consequence was if we didn't pull it off, but it was something outrageous, like forcing us to square dance with each other. Anjanette went on to explain how, in the days that followed, she and her classmates held each other accountable for the amount of food they left on their plates at the end of each meal. They strategized and came up with solutions. The most important of these was to take smaller portions to begin with. "We helped each other out," Anjanette explained. "If, after I was done eating, I still had vegan mashed potatoes on my plate, and Ted and Brian wanted second helpings, I would pass them my leftovers. We nudged each other, or shouted at each other, take your pick, when our plates were piled too high with food. Toward the end, when it looked like we might not reach our goal, we really put the pressure on each other. Because, let's face it, we just hit puberty. We would do anything to avoid having to touch each other, much less partner up for a square dance." By the last dinner, Anjanette and her fellow campers surprised even themselves. They got that bucket down to zero waste. Zero. Zilch. Squat. As in, no one needs to do anything with the two words that should never be said together. Square and dance. In essence, what Anjanette and her friends did was to buddy up to ensure that they met their goals. The benefits of using an accountability buddy or group are numerous. Chief among them, 1, your stick-to-itiveness skyrockets because someone else depends on you, and good old friendly competition doesn't hurt either. 2, when you go through a painful process with others, the pain is diminished. 3, the action of enforcing a plan or system with someone else ensures that you are more likely to do your part. And 4, when you meet regularly with your buddy and or group, you get into a rhythm that makes it easier to stay the course and achieve your goal. Big aspirational goals get broken down into smaller achievable milestones. Profit first works, and getting an accountability buddy will make sure you let it. Going it alone is the biggest mistake number 1. Entrepreneurs make when implementing profit first, but there are others. In this chapter, I'll share a few more pitfalls and how to avoid them as you work the profit-first system. Don't worry, none of my solutions require you to square dance. No offense to any square dance readers. Mistake number two, too much, too soon. It is extremely common for entrepreneurs new to Profit First to start putting 20% or even 30% into their profit account right out of the gate. The next month, they realize they can't afford it and pull the money back out to pay bills, which defeats the entire process. You must allocate profit and not touch it. So you've got to be sure that your business can handle the reduction in operating income. To increase your profit, you need to become more efficient to deliver the same or better results at a lower cost. Profit First works from the end goal backward. Once upon a time, you used to try to get more efficient in order to turn a profit. Now, by taking Profit First, you must become efficient to support it. Same result, reverse engineered. This is why I suggest you start with a small percentage. Don't fall into the trap of hogging all of the grub, taking too much profit up front, and then shuffling most of it back into your operating expenses account when payroll comes due. Start with a small percentage to build the habit. Every quarter, move your profit first allocation percentages closer to your goal by increasing them by an additional 1 or 2%. Starting slowly and moving slowly and deliberately will still force you to look for ways to get better and more efficient at what you do, but you won't be tempted to throw in the towel on the entire system because the pressure is too great or the task impossible. Jorge and Jose, once pumped by the results they had achieved with lower percentages, allocated 20% of their profit account and quickly realized their business could not support both that much profit and the way that they were growing. So they adjusted the percentage until they achieved a balance with their profit account allocation. They discovered that 9% in profit is high enough to make a real difference in their rainy day and celebration funds, but low enough that it did not hinder their current strategy for market domination. Their strategy is constant, in front of the industry innovation. To achieve that, they established a powerful retention plan of paying their employees 30% more than the industry norm. Yes, they pay their employees more than the competition, allowing them to retain the best engineers in the market and, wait for it, are still wildly profitable for their industry. That's the power of reverse engineering your profit. You identify the elements that support the profit, in this case, great employees who stay with you for the long haul, commit to it, and jettison the things that don't. Jorge and Jose adjust the profit account percentages on a regular basis, factoring in short and long-term needs. They've done everything right and have a successful, thriving business to show for it. Too much of a good thing is possible, even when it comes to watching your profit account grow rapidly. Whether you make this mistake at the outset of implementing the Profit First system or down the road when the future looks especially rosy, be sure to correct it as soon as possible, or you'll find yourself slipping back into the survival trap. Just one additional note before we go on to the next mistake. I see people start waffling, and that is the crushing blow to Profit First. They allocate 20 or 30% to their profit. They can't sustain those profits. They take the money out, they pay bills, but then they keep the 20%, they put the money back into profit, and they pull it back out. And then it just becomes this glorified shell game until they finally give up and say, there's no profit at the end of the quarter or at the end of the year, and they're done. So if you have to pull out the profit account, I'll give you one mulligan. You can do it, but you got to adjust the percentages. They have to be realistic, and then you slowly turn up the heat on yourself. You slowly increase the profit. Don't go all in on this, and definitely don't waffle. Mistake number three, grow first and profit later. I like the idea of profit first, but I want to grow my company. This is probably the most common objection I get when I share profit first with others. Too many entrepreneurs believe that you can have only one or the other, growth or profit. It sickens me that so many entrepreneurs think it is a trade-off. Pick growth or pick profit, but you can't have both. Bullshit. Profit and growth go hand in hand. The healthiest companies figure out how to consistently be profitable first and then do everything to grow that. Maybe the lure of the four or five magical success stories we hear about over and over and over again has caused this myth about profit and growth to take hold among entrepreneurs. You know, The stories about companies that skyrocket in growth, and after enough investors throw money at them, they turn a profit big time. I mean, don't you want to be the next Google or Facebook? If so, the path is clear. Copy them. The problem with this strategy is the companies behind these same magical success stories are the lottery winners of the entrepreneurial game. They're not the rule. Not even close. They are the one in a million oddball successes where the right approach was to grow, 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 and that sparked the turn to profit. Yet the grow-at-all-costs approach rarely results in profit. In fact, it's hard even to find stories you would recognize because the grow-at-all-costs mentality has produced a landscape of trashed, dumped, and destroyed businesses that you never heard of because no one ever talks about the failures. And that's another quirk of our behavior called selection bias. But perhaps you are familiar with Twitter. It's an ongoing entity even today. As I record this, we'll see how much longer. After 10 years in business, Twitter still isn't profitable. It has lost $2 billion since 2011 and has yet to figure out a way to make a penny in profit. It keeps hiring new management teams, new leadership, new anything to figure out a way to become profitable, but it can't. Isn't that crazy? To grow first and then try to figure out profit later? Twitter is trying to do just that. And unless it pulls a miracle out of thin air, its well of investor capital is going to run dry. At the time of this reading, rumors have been circulating for years that the company is for sale, but it seems no one is interested. Maybe buyers are getting savvy and have decided that if a company can't figure out how to be profitable, they can't do it either. The irony is that Twitter is just a massive example of what goes wrong when the focus is growth, leaving profit to be addressed in the future. This mentality is everywhere, and the scenario plays out in every size business. Grow at all costs, until there's no money left, and the end is a miserable, lonely death. Fun times. When profit comes first, your business will automatically show you the path to grow. I wonder how different Twitter would be had its founders committed to profit from day one. It would likely be a very different and much healthier company indeed. Maybe the decree by Mark Cuban, the wildly successful entrepreneur and shark on Shark Tank, will set the record straight. In his February 2009 blog post titled "The Mark Cuban Stimulus Plan," he outlines what it takes for a business to thrive and for him to invest money in their growth. My favorite bullets are 1 and 4. 1, it can be an existing business or a startup. 4, it must be profitable within 90 days. I believe you need to be profitable starting today. One of the world's most famous investors gives leniency. He gives you the quarter. Mistake number 4, cutting the wrong costs. By now, you know that I'm a frugality junkie. I get a high from saving money, and I get the biggest rush when I find a way to eliminate an expense altogether. Still, not all expenses should be cut. We need to invest in assets, and I define assets as things that bring more efficiency to your business by allowing you to get more results at a lower cost per result. So, if an expense makes it easier to get better results, keep it or purchase it. I once toured the factory of a company that makes knives. When I noticed they were using old tools, one of the owners said, "Yup, we even have systems from the 1960s. We save so much money by keeping our old equipment." During my tour, I also noticed that the knives they produced were inconsistent in terms of quality. Some of the knives were sharp, some were not. The handles rarely had a snug fit. Coincidentally, I had toured a different knife company earlier that week and noted that in one cumulative hour of manufacturing time, they were able to turn out one perfect knife after another at a volume 4 times that of the company stuck in the decade of screaming Beatles fans and free love. Money is made by efficiency. Invest in it. If a purchase will bring up your bottom line and create significant efficiency, find ways to cut costs elsewhere and consider different or discounted equipment or resources or services rather than sacrifice efficiency for what you think are savings. Mistake number 5, plowing back and reinvesting. We use fancy terms to justify taking money out of our different allocation accounts to cover expenses. 2 that are used most often are plow back and reinvest, which are really just other ways to say borrow. I have done this. I plowed back money from my profit account to cover operating expenses. And boy, do I regret it. When you don't have enough money in your operating expense account to cover expenses, it is a big red flag that your expenses are too high and you need to find a way to fix them fast. Once in a blue moon, it could also mean that you are allocating too much to owner's comp or profit. This only happens when you start with a high profit or owner's comp percentage. And when it happens, it is because you are taking a percentage of profit or pay that you are not able to sustain. The efficiencies are not yet in place to support your profitability. But again, this is rarely the reason your OPEX account is in the red. Likewise, some entrepreneurs continue to use their credit cards for day-to-day operations and call them lines of credit. This is not accurate. It's money you don't have. Your credit card spending limit is almost never a bridge loan to carry the business for short cash flow gaps. For example, a big profitable job isn't paying the bill on time, as it was committed to. Nope. Credit cards are used simply to pay expenses, resulting in debt, plain and simple. Using a credit card to cover what you can't afford is also a red flag that your expenses are too high. Stop using the credit cards and reserve it for legitimate emergencies or unique circumstances, like for a purchase you must make to yield income and profit, substantial profit. When you find yourself in a situation where you feel the need to plow back your profits, stop to reassess. There's always a better, more sustainable way to maintain the health of your business. You need to invest thought, not reinvest money. Mistake number 6, raiding the tax account. In the first year or two of doing Profit First, you may get caught in a tax bind because you only pay your estimates. For example, your accountant may prepare estimates based on your business's prior year's income and profitability that say you should make payments of, say, $5,000 every quarter. As your profit account and tax account grow, you may be surprised to see that you're reserving about $8,000 in taxes each quarter. Seeing this, you might think, hey, my accountant said I should pay $5,000 per quarter. I'm reserving too much for taxes. A little voice inside your head may even say, don't touch that money. You'll probably need it for taxes. And then a louder voice will say, nah, don't worry about it. You probably won't owe it. And even if you do, you'll have time. Cue the $3,000 withdrawal to pay yourself or pay bills. A still louder voice, one I may have heard myself, might say, why not start leasing a brand new sports car with that money? Not only is it a business expense, you will instantly become the sexiest beast on this planet. Do not listen. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. Big mistake. As your profitability grows, your taxes will too. In fact, paying more taxes is an indicator that your business health is improving. Now, I am not saying you should ever pay more taxes than you need to. Tax is just an expense like any other. But do realize that your taxes will grow as your business health does. So don't steal from your tax account thinking you won't need the money for taxes. You will. At times, you may even need more than you think. One year, I messed up when I paid my estimated taxes every quarter and then used the extra money to increase my owner's comp when I discovered there was money left over. Dummy. Tax estimates are based on prior year's income. If you make more profit this year, which you will pay more taxes. But your tax estimates will not change. If you spend leftover money from your tax account simply because you allocate more than the estimate, you will be in shock come tax time. Now, here's the deal. My accountant and I talk on a quarterly basis, and I encourage you, as you implement Profit First, work with a Profit First professional, an accountant or bookkeeper, who you talk with on a quarterly basis. Because here's the power, you can adjust your estimates. So you set your tax estimates now based upon what happened the prior year, but you can adjust your estimates as you move along. And as your accountant or your bookkeeper sees the increasing profitability, they may suggest, usually your accountant will suggest, a change to your tax reserve and your tax estimates. So talk to an accountant who specializes in both profit maximization and tax minimization. If you're unsure whether they can do this, by the way, ask them their method. I hope they're using Profit First. Every quarter to gauge how you're doing on taxes. And don't take money out of that tax account. Your business is growing by leaps and bounds, and higher taxes are definitely in your future. Another tax issue has to do with paying down debt. I call this paying for your sins, because if you have debt you need to wipe out, implementing profit first is going to hurt in the beginning. I should know. It happened to me. Here's the problem. The government gives you a tax break on expenses, but does not consider the money you reserve to pay down debt an expense. The actual charges on your credit card and the interest and credit card fees can be expensed, but not your payments to pay down your cards. I can't believe I'm saying this, but in this case, the government is right. You get the tax benefit in the year that you make the purchase, no matter if you paid for the expense in cash, by credit card, or with funds from a bank loan or credit line. As you become profitable and pay off debt, you will pay taxes on that income. Eliminating debt and paying taxes will feel like a double whammy. It isn't. You just need to pay for your, air quotes, sins. Mistake number 7, adding complexity. As Profit First grew in popularity, I found a completely unexpected failure point. People think it needs to be more complex. It's a weird phenomena, but many entrepreneurs are so used to struggling with accounting details that they feel they need to struggle with Profit First. And if they are not struggling, they think something must be wrong. So they just make up rules to add confusion. I know this sounds odd, but I have seen it happen time and time again. I have seen entrepreneurs modify their bank balances by introducing depreciation or amortization of stuff. Don't do this. Cash is cash. Either you have it or you don't. I have seen entrepreneurs take a profit distribution, put it in their savings, then pay for a purchase or make a hire with the money and say it was not an expense because it came out of their pocket. Ah! That is a shell game. And that is an expense. Profit is a reward in the form of a cash distribution for the equity owners of the business and is above and beyond their pay from working in the business. That's owner's comp. The system is super easy. It has been designed to work with how you naturally work. Hence, it is fluid. Don't overthink it. Don't add complexity. Do not try to outsmart the system. Just get comfortable with the fact that sometimes getting the results you want is way easier to achieve than all the hard work you've put in to getting the results that you don't want. Mistake number 8, skipping the bank accounts. Some folks try to simplify Profit First by not setting up the bank accounts. They just have their bookkeeper manage it. They are entrepreneurs after all, and they don't have the time for unnecessary nuances. So they use a spreadsheet or modify the chart of accounts in their accounting system to emulate the Profit First small plate bank accounts. Then, immediately, Profit First fails to work. When this happens, they blame the system. But the problem is, they didn't use the system. Profit First must be set up to be directly in the path of the natural behavior of you, the entrepreneur. Because you log onto your bank account to look at your balances and make decisions, you must have Profit First there. Spreadsheets and your accounting system's general ledger reports are also great, but they are also too late. I'm a poet, and I didn't even know it. You don't have to look at them when making in-the-moment money decisions. You look at them after the fact. Coming up with a battle plan after the battle is over is useless. Profit First at the bank will be in your face every time you look at the accounts, enabling you to manage profitability and cash flow decisions in real time. Setting up your accounts means you can't avoid it, and that is exactly how it needs to be. Profit First Professionals, PFPs. Now, before I read this short section to you, I want to tell you why I'm reading this to you and why this is important. I believe in this organization more than anything else I've ever done in my life. And the reason is I have a very clear purpose in my life. It is to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. I've lived it. It is painful and it's unnecessary. But the other thing is, once we eradicate entrepreneurial poverty, once your business is truly profitable and sustainable, I've said this before, you will educate your employees about it by default, by osmosis. Maybe you'll teach them in person. It would be great. You'll tell your friends and teach them. Again, maybe by osmosis, maybe you'll teach them. You'll expose your family to it. It'll start this upward spiral instead of a downward. Well, what I found is there's great resistance in the support staff that's out there, the experts, the professionals, the accountants, the bookkeepers, the business coaches. Not that they're resistant because they want harm for you. They just don't get it. They don't understand it. And I found so many people failing at starting Profit First when their accountant instantly unwound the system. So initially I thought, well, I'll just go out there and I will just speak more frequently, more enthusiastically, relentlessly. I won't quit. And while that's true, I will never quit on my mission. I realize I alone can't impact everybody. I can't get in the process with you. Maybe you can hear this book and I can speak to you, but I can't get in the process with you. So that's why I started Profit First Professionals. And it has grown far beyond just me. It's its own organization now. It's organic and it's growing rapidly. It's attracting who I believe the best of the best in the world. Not the highest end accountant who went to the most elite Ivy League training, but the highest end accountant who cares the most. That bookkeeper who is relentlessly committed to your success, who's relentlessly committed to eradicating entrepreneurial poverty. So that's why I want to tell you about Profit First Professionals in this short little paragraph together. These are people I believe in more than anything. While you can absolutely stick with Profit First and avoid the biggest mistakes on your own, working with a Profit First professional, we also call them PFPs, bookkeepers, accountants, business coaches, and other experts trained and certified to help you drive profitability in your business will make it easier. You want to work with someone who has seen the problem with other companies before you, sadly, discover them for yourself. It's like working with a trainer at the gym rather than going it alone. Trainers help you reach your fitness goals faster. PFPs get you to profit faster and with fewer problems. When you have a trainer waiting for you at the gym, you have built-in accountability, and your workouts will be safer and more effective as well. If you are having trouble getting your bookkeeper or accountant on board with Profit First, I humbly ask you consider working with a PFP. You can find one at ProfitFirstProfessionals.com. One last little tip about them. Every PFP is required to implement Profit First in their own system. They don't just teach it and support it. They have to live it. That's the only way they can become a PFP. My own business and life has turned around for the better because of Profit First. I am eternally grateful for the financial stability and freedom it has given me. But I also know how easy it is to fall off the Profit First wagon. Before my ninja bookkeeper, Deborah, started holding my feet to the fire, it happened to me. And I've seen it happen to many businesses. Not only do people fall off the wagon, it rolls over them. It is easy to fall back into the old ways because they seem to make sense. They don't. Or because our accountant says we shouldn't bother. We should. Or because we think we're happier doing things the old way. We weren't. I'll leave you with a quote from the great athlete Sir Roger Bannister, who bursted through the myth that the 4-minute mile could not be beaten. The man who can drive himself further once the effort gets painful is the man who will win. Righto, Sir Roger. Take action. Get real with your accountant. Sit down with your accountant, bookkeeper, or coach, ideally all three, preferably a PFP trained in the system, and come up with a game plan to ensure that you don't end up allocating too much revenue to your profit account and you do allocate enough money to your tax account. Schedule quarterly check-ins to make sure you are consistently building up your profit and other allocations while reducing your operating expenses. And if for any reason whatsoever you've not yet set up Profit First at the bank, for the sake of all that is holy, do it now. Follow the lead of Claudia Santos, who emailed me from South Africa just as I was typing the final words in this chapter and said, "Just started with your book. Can't seem to put it down. Anyway, just following your instructions and doing what you said." Claudio opened his account and sent me an email to tell me about it, just as I asked you to do in Chapter 1. I strongly suspect he is about to see a positive turn in his profits. That's it. Just do it. Epilogue. Rick Barry is one of the greatest foul shooters of all time. He is a 12-time NBA All-Star and a member of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. His free throw record is 89.3%. In the NBA, the average is 75%, and many players miss half the time. Two of the greatest basketball players of all time, Shaquille O'Neal and Wilt Chamberlain, had a free throw percentage of less than 53%, and both missed more than 5,000 free throw attempts over the course of their careers. How did Barry sink so many free throws? He shot granny style, underhanded. The underhand shot, ironically, is not with the hands under the basketball. The shooter's hands grip the sides of the ball, with the ball held down about waist high. Then the shot is made by swinging the arms up and throwing the ball forward. Two interesting things happen. First, the arm movement is greatly simplified. As opposed to the overhand shot that requires the coordination of a lot more joints, read that as more variables, the underhand shot keeps the arms locked and the wrists cocked, read that as fewer variables. The result is a much more consistent shot. The other part is that it puts much more backspin on the ball, allowing it to land with a better placement. If it hits the rim, it bounces vertically more often, which allows the ball to stay near the rim and means it is more likely to fall in. If you try, and stick with, a Rick Barry granny-style shot, your free throw shot percentage will increase dramatically. And yet, you probably won't do it in front of your buddies. College and pro basketball players adopting granny style? Hell no! Even though the most elite players are paid millions to score points, and using the granny style shot will even help them score more points, pro players don't take advantage of it. The fear of looking stupid or inexperienced wins out over logic, which tells players that the underhand shot will give them a higher success rate. It might also help them get into the record books. You see, Wilt Chamberlain, the guy with the meager free throw percentage, became a legend in part when he scored a record-breaking 100 points for the Philadelphia Warriors over the New York Knicks in 1962, and he did it by scoring more free throw points. In fact, he broke a free throw record in that game. How did he do it? In that game, Chamberlain shot his free throws granny style. Who knew that Granny was such a badass? I wish I could shoot like good old Granny. Scratch that. I wish I'd kept shooting like her, because I did when I was a little kid, and never became too cool to compromise points. Lesson learned, Grandma. I will never be too cool to score more points, and never, ever too cool to compromise profit, even if no one else gets putting profit first. And let me give you a little aside here. I ran the statistics, and this is the part that just blows my mind. Now remember, professional basketball players are paid to make baskets. The more points they make, the more value they are to the team. So I ran the analysis. What would happen if everyone on a team shot granny style? On average, the point score for a team would go up by, I think it was 7 or 8 points. Now, the average NBA game is won by 6 points, which means they would win. The team that goes all granny shots would win every game. They would assure themselves a spot in the NBA championship. And yet they don't do it. It's that absurd. There is a better system out there, but because it's unfamiliar, uncool, and no one else does it, basketball players don't do it. I couldn't be more thrilled that Profit First is catching on big time. But chances are you are still the first of your friends to implement Profit First. And just as good friends would behave when you are the first to try something new, they might mock you. Welcome to the granny shot of accounting and money management. Profit First. By implementing it, the odds for success and fulfillment in your business are now in your favor. But to those unfamiliar with the system, it might appear to be an awkward or overly simplistic approach to accounting and bookkeeping. As you walk up to your own free throw line, the bank, and open a bunch of accounts that you now know will change your life, you may hear snickers and taunts. That's okay. Just like Barry, you know it works, and you're in good company. Daily, literally every single day, I receive emails from people who have read Profit First telling me how applying it help them turn their business around. That's just email. I also consistently get Facebook posts, tweets, snail mail, believe it or not, and calls, and some people have even written articles about their Profit First success stories. Some stories I shared with you in this book. Others I share in my keynote addresses. Some folks I interview on my Profit First podcast. And all of them are saved or photographed and stored on my hard drive for all of eternity. Eradicating entrepreneurial poverty is my life's mission, and my readers are part of that. You are part of that. I struggle to remember all the names, but I remember the stories. Like the organic farmer, who, after 14 years of losses, decided to give up and close the farm. Before she acted on her decision, she decided to try profit first. Within 6 months, she had turned her first profit. She was reinvigorated, and her business was growing and profitable. A couple who raises horses in the middle of Australia in a town with a population of like 10, who wrote to me not too long ago. Their marriage was on the rocks because their business was slowly sucking away at their souls. Then they read Profit First and applied what they learned. It saved their business and their marriage. I've heard from countless CEOs and entrepreneurs who got their confidence back, their joy back, their sanity back, their weekends back, and from people who are no longer plagued with anxiety, insomnia, and other ailments caused by the challenge of running an unprofitable business. As for me, running a profit-first business and lifestyle has given me complete confidence over my finances and freed me from the endless search for a big payout. I'm no longer looking for the holy grail. I don't need it. I'm not hoping that one day someone will swoop in and save me from a check-by-check business by buying me out. My businesses are profitable today, and they will continue to be profitable tomorrow, next month, and in the years to come. I am debt-free and stringing together one small financial win after another, every 10th and 25th of the month. The normal response to fixing problems is to try to change our habits. In The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg says, habits are click-whir. Triggered by something like an empty bank account, click, we go into our reactionary routine, like making panicky collection calls, for example, whir. As Duhigg points out in his book, changing habits is possible, but it's also really, really hard. Instead, simple systems that capture the good parts of our habits and guard us from the bad parts will bring about positive and permanent change fast. That's all Profit First is, a simple system that works with us as we are. All you have to do is follow it. You don't have to get an MBA or take an accounting course or start devouring articles in the Wall Street Journal. You don't even need to know how to read your own income statement, cash flow statement, or balance sheet. You don't have to change or fix who you are for this to work. It just does. Why would I ask you to change who you are? You've been able to grow an amazing business doing what you do, and that's remarkable by any measure. Now all we have to do is capture your good money habits and put guardrails up to protect you from your humanness. It really is that simple. We are going to put profit first, period. Step up to the line, ignore the naysayers, grip the ball, and throw that granny shot. Don't pay any mind to what others think. They just don't get it yet. Just as Barry and Chamberlain for one legendary game racked up the points, you'll watch your profit and your business grow while you do what comes naturally to you. And trust me, you surely won't look like a granny. You'll look more like an entrepreneurial genius. You don't need a miracle or a lucky night in Vegas. You don't need a windfall, a colossal client, or a worldwide phenomena to realize the vision you've held for your business since you opened your first box of business cards. You simply need to put your profit first and everything else will fall into line. It's not rocket science, and you don't have to have a truckload of karma to get it. Financial freedom really is just a few small plates away. Acknowledgements. If I had to do this project alone, it would have taken me 10 times longer, and this book would be 1/10 of what it is today. As I flip through the pages one final time before it goes to the printers, I have chills. I truly believe this book will change the world, and the reason it will is because of the relentless effort of an army of amazing colleagues and friends, all driven to serve entrepreneurs and help them become permanently profitable. First and foremost, I want to thank Anjanette Harper, my writing partner. When we created the first version of Profit First, the goal was simple. Write a book that can change the world. Rebuilding Profit First into this second book has made the good stuff even better, and I can proudly put a stamp of this will change the world upon it. Anjanette, you are the yin to my yang. 5 books down, 20 to go. When a man orders a beet sandwich and 4 coffees for lunch, you know you are working with someone who's playing at the next level. Kashuk Viswanath, my editor at Portfolio, went page by page, sentence by sentence, dozens of times to make Profit First even easier to master, while never compromising the system, the tone, or my style. Thank you, Kashuk, for further empowering the Profit First concept and further empowering me to be me. Thank you to Liz Dobrinska, my graphic designer, who said, "Oh, I have an idea," and brought powerful visuals to vague concepts. A big shout out to Go Leeward, the best speaking agency on the planet, hands down, which has helped me travel the globe to speak about Profit First to anyone and everyone who will listen. Their website, by the way, is Go Leeward, spelled GOLEEWARD.com. There are a few behind-the-scenes people who spend every day educating accountants, bookkeepers, coaches, and entrepreneurs on Profit First. They are true profit warriors. Ron Saharian, better known as Obi-Ron Kenobi, who is the biggest supporter of Profit First I've ever known. If you run into Obi-Ron on the street, chances are he will give you a Profit First sticker, book, or t-shirt. Big thanks to Christina Bolduc, better known as Kebby, who keeps the Profit First professional team humming. And Aaron Moger, better known as Mo, and Mike Scalise, better known as the Hawaiian Lumberjack, and the new folks too, Brandon, Kelsey, Eleni, who, together, help business after business master Profit First. My thank yous would not be complete without acknowledging you, the courageous entrepreneur. You are the definition of a superhero. You are fighting for profitability for yourself, your family, your employees, your community, and our world. Keep fighting, superhero. Keep fighting. And last, but certainly first in my soul, to Krista. I live you. And that's not a mistake. It's not just I love you. It's I live you.
This has been a Gildan Audio production. For more affordable, life-changing audio programs, visit our website at gildanmedia.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.